All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. Now we're lucky enough to have Adam Mora on the show for the last segment. He's a reporter for Interpress Service. That's ipsnews.net. And we run quite a few of his articles at antiwar.com as well. And he's in Cairo right now, I believe. Welcome back to the show, Adam. How's it going?
Hey, good. Very good, Scott. How are you doing? Good to talk to you again.
I'm doing great. I really appreciate you joining us today. So, update us on the revolution. What the heck is going on over there?
What's the latest on the revolution? Well, I'm sure you probably went over a couple, 2 weeks ago, the last sort of major thing to happen was the national referendum that was held, which I'm sure you talked about with your listeners about. That was about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, we talked about Ahmed El-Assi, your friend on the show.
Right. When the public basically voted overwhelmingly to endorse the amendment of 7 or 8 constitutional articles, which are expected to, or which are designed to, liberalize the political, free up the electoral process.
So that wasn't just some ham-handed internal coup by the military to placate some nonsense. That was a real thing, and you supported it, huh?
What the referendum represented was, even though it was a watershed in the sense that it was the first real free balloting that took place in Egypt in modern history, it was also the first sort of, it also represented the first sort of, split in public opinion. Because since the revolution, the public has been extremely united and unified, and that's the thing that really took down the regime, was the fact that they were unable to sort of break up the, break up this, drive a wedge between the secularists and the religious people, or the Muslims and the Christians, or the so this did sort of represent the very first time that there was a major split in the public, which sort of broke down between religious and secularist lines. With the most of the people who voted for the constitutional amendments were actually tended to be more Islamic in nature than those who voted against it.
Mm-hmm. And so what kind of reforms? I saw that the secret police was abolished and then renamed something else.
Oh, right. Yeah, that was actually something. I was out of town when that happened. But, yeah, apparently the state security, the infamous state security, was abolished, was formally abolished a couple of weeks ago. I believe there's some kind of new institution that's supposed to take its place. But to be honest with you, I'm not exactly sure. I'm meant to write up an IPS story about it, but I actually am not exactly sure what the implications are going to be. Mm-hmm. People are afraid that that was the institution that was closely associated with the Interior Ministry before,
right?
And which was responsible for a lot of the bad stuff that happened during the revolution and before.
All right, now I try to pay a lot of attention to the news. Certainly, I never went to grad school about Egypt or anything like that. But I really know next to nothing about the place, never been there. I think that goes for most Americans, which might be a reason why we ought to stay out of intervening in countries where we don't really know what's going on. But best I can tell from here, it seems like, depending on your point of view, this revolution was really just kind of a minor thing. It was sort of a vote in no confidence in the current prime minister or whatever, but it was not really a change of regime. The military really is the regime there, and all that everybody's waiting for now is basically to put a new civilian head on the same old military dictatorship they had all along. And, you know, obviously, you know, being a little bit hyperbolic, I know you're saying that there's some bright prospects, but I wonder, you know, is that what basically the people in Tahrir Square think, that their revolution is very incomplete, or you know, where do
really
we all stand against the regime at this point?
Right, that's a really good point. A friend of mine was just saying, who exactly is this military? This is a friend of mine, an Egyptian friend who lives abroad, who came back to Egypt for the Tahrir events, was actually just saying, who exactly is this Supreme Council of the Armed Forces, you know, that sort of been posed as this protector of the people and who stepped in to protect the people from the police and all of this sort of stuff, is actually really, the Egyptian military is actually extremely close to the U.S. military. And there have been a lot of criticisms about a lot of people saying that the revolution is incomplete because, like you just said, there's now this sort of military, you know, there's this sort of military running the show now. as opposed to an elected head of state. But that hopefully will change with elections. I know that parliamentary elections are scheduled for September, and presidential elections should come shortly after that, a couple months after that, although it hasn't been exactly decided. It hasn't been determined exactly when yet. But if those elections go down like the last referendum did in a free and unimpeded way, if they're allowed to be held democratically, the will of the people should be will then be represented.
What's really the motivation behind this revolution in Egypt? I mean, obviously the revolution in Tunisia sort of set the example, like, wow, you can do that. Let's go out and do that. But you know, some say it's just you know, price inflation. People, especially the very poor, can't even afford their food budget that they were barely getting by on. Others would point to torture or you know, American support for Mubarak's cruelty, you know, across the board, including, say, the Gaza blockade, cooperating with that, et cetera. But, you know, when you're out there in Tahrir Square, what is it that is, you know, the overriding agreed-upon goal of these people?
That's also another really good question. I think it was a combination of all the things you just said. Years and years of extremely unpopular policies, both domestically and foreign, like you said, like the Gaza blockade is incredibly unpopular. It makes the Egyptian people feel that they're somehow complicit in the strangulation of the Gaza Strip, as well as loads and loads of other foreign regional policies. As well as what you said, the horrific domestic situation in which human rights were run over roughshod. The situation with torture. I don't know if you remember there was the Khaled Said case, where a young man from Alexandria was beaten to death by police. That was must have happened about 6 to 9 months before the revolution. That made a very big deal, where two policemen were implicated in beating to death this young man. That had a very wide effect, very big effect on a lot of people. But I think the thing that sort of triggered it was the economic stuff. I think the situation was just getting so bad in terms of inflation, in terms of people's salaries no longer being able to cover, no longer able to get by with your average salaries. People couldn't put food on the tables for their families anymore, and I think that was the final, the sort of straw that broke the camel's back, you know. But like I said, it was a combination of all of those things.
Yeah, well, that's the irony for me, of course, is the inflation of the money supply, the U.S. dollar, in which so many of these international goods like wheat are denominated in, and you know, they do all this in order to expand the reach of the empire across the Middle East, and at the same time are just sowing the seeds of their own undoing, as it, you know, breeds
for
rebellion,
sure,
from
the,
Morocco
the
to Pakistan.
Situation, exactly. The economic situation in Egypt was hardly unique to Egypt, as you know. I mean, it's the result of globalization, and, I mean, the same can be said in so many other countries. But what's interesting is a place like Bahrain isn't particularly known. I mean, there's a place that isn't it's not really considered a poor country. I mean, Tunis was, Libya was. Egypt was, but in a country like Bahrain, so it's not. I mean, it's not. I mean, there are factors at play here besides just economics. But I do think that was, certainly in Egypt's case, that was the overriding factor. But I mean, people, I've heard complaints coming out of the United States about how the how bad the economy is. Maybe if I could just ask you a question. I mean, what is the story in the States these days? I mean, economy a huge issue now? Is inflation as bad as what I've been hearing?
Well, we export a lot of our inflation. I mean, you see it in the price of everything that they no longer count in the consumer price index or whatever. So on TV,
right,
they say the inflation rate is low, but anybody who has to fill their tank or buy food or medicine or, you know, of course, it's the most state-connected industries that have the most inflation for obvious reasons. They're the ones getting the money first as it's created.
Right.
And,
right.
But, of course, yeah, I mean, it seems to me, and better Austrian school economists than me certainly have pointed to the fact that, you know, Egypt, I think, imports two-thirds of their food from overseas and, you know, most of their grain from the United States, and they have to buy that food in American dollars that are depreciating. And so if you live on $2 a day and you get cut to really $2 is only worth $1 now, you're in a real bad place. Can't put food on your family, as George Bush and you just said. So anyway, right. Let's reprise this maybe tomorrow or Monday.
Sure. Sounds okay. Good.
All right, great. I really appreciate your time on the show. I'm sorry we're all out of it. I screwed up the country code there, but these things happen
sure,
during live
no
radio.
Problem. No problem. Look forward to doing it again, Scott.
Okay, take care. Everybody, that's okay. Adam Morrow. He is a reporter for Interpress Service. That's ipsnews.net. And is on the phone from Cairo. And hopefully I'll have read better and we'll have better questions when we reprise this thing here in the coming days. Anti-war radio. See you tomorrow.